Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, some reaction coming in on the WhatsApp at the moment. Good morning, Clem. And quite a bit of reaction actually coming in. And something about that system I'll have to do, because incoming messages then drown out the message that I was about to read. Anyway, let's try that again. Good morning, Clem. Would you please send birthday wishes to my granddaughter, Amanda Dunn? She's 30 today. Have a great day. See you later for the cake. And thanks for the way you've looked after me since my operation. I love you, says Teresa Harrison. Now, regarding our ducks, we're told a drake is a male duck. Oh, right. Yeah, you were wrong, lads, Kieran and Owen. A drake is a male duck, and a duck is a female duck. A mallard is a breed of duck.
Just to clarify, that's what we said.
No, you didn't. You said a drake was a male duck. You said a mallard was a male duck.
No, drake is a male duck.
You didn't say that.
I did.
I got to bring down the tapes now and have them. In fact, Superintendent Martin Walker's on the line here. And Martin, you wouldn't be able to bring in a squad there, would you, that could examine the tapes for me, please? To check the reliability of what they're saying here, contradicting themselves. Anyway, the mallard is a breed of duck. I think they're the ones with the green heads, are they?
Or am I getting that wrong? They're the typical ones you'd see. They're the ones you would see, the most common ones in Ireland. You'd see them around the ponds there in Naas. And they're actually protected under the Wildlife Act 1976. There's an open season order on them.
Right, that's interesting, yeah. Because I don't know if you've heard about that incident, the incidents in Dublin.
I did, about the young fellas buying ducks and ducklings for a fiver each. I heard that.
Yeah, they're scooping them out of the canals from the... It's terrible activity altogether, and then selling them on. They get up to anything. Some of them. So therefore, Superintendent Martin Walker has confirmed that the two of you are wrong. And I was right. Anyway, we'll be with you in just a moment, Martin. A listener says, I had my first AstraZeneca on Sunday in City West and was told my second would be between 8 and 12 weeks. So I think the waiting time has shortened. Good morning, all. Please don't read out my name. This is a text I got from... I don't know who, as per NIAC and HSE updated guidelines, your second dose AstraZeneca vaccine will now be scheduled at 16 weeks, date and venue to be confirmed. However, if you're over 50 years of age or have a very high risk of high risk medical condition, you'll be scheduled at 12 weeks. So there's the clarity. If you're at risk, 12 weeks. AstraZeneca, if you're not at risk, 16 weeks. And finally, for the moment, Clem, that COVID Kildare rate is driven by the current Newbridge rate of 484.8 per 100,000. Can anyone explain or update that situation? Well, we can't, except rely on what NPHET is saying and ask everyone to be careful out there. Now, keep your messages coming. 045-901-490 to chat to Kira. Email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can text or WhatsApp us on 08 33 97 97 97. Okay, and we spoke about, by the way, Gillian Bird of the Dublin Society of the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals having one of the best names for an animal welfare organisation. Another listener, Mary in Kilteel, says, no, I have a better one, Clem. Birdwatch Ireland, Niall Hatch. Isn't that quite amazing? Quite a coincidence. Thanks, Mary. Good one. Now, Martin, serious matters here, because apparently you had quite an incident in Newbridge Garda Station overnight, did you?
That's right, Clem. Yeah, we received a call just before 9 o'clock of a man acting suspiciously down near Lambeth in Moorfield, in that he had filled up a container with petrol. Now, a short time after that, Clem, he actually presented at the Garda Station, didn't engage in conversation or anything at all, but he was carrying a detergent spray container, you know, that particular type. And in one hand, and then in the other hand, he was carrying a cigarette lighter. And as I say, without engaging in conversation, he started to spray the entire public area of the Garda Station at Newbridge, and also onto his hands, which was very worrying. Two probationers, actually, they immediately ran around and they confronted him. And at which stage, then he sprayed one of the guards, and he tried to set him on fire with the spray of the petrol and the lighter. But fortunately, between the two of them, they were able to subdue him, and he was subsequently arrested. A 29-year-old man, homeless man living in the area of Newbridge, and subsequently he was brought to the Lakeview unit, where he is technically still in custody under the provisions of Section 4. And I'd imagine that later today I'll be consulting with the DPP with regard to what charges, if any, to be preferred against. But you may recall a few years ago, back in the 21st of July 1999, Andrew Callanan, a lovely sergeant up in Talla, and in circumstances not totally dissimilar from this, he died as a result of burns received when he was set on fire with petrol at the station there. So very, very potentially dangerous to the public, to the individual himself, and to members of An Garda Síochána. So I'm delighted it came to a peaceful and quiet end in the end, Clem.
Potentially a tragic situation, Martin. I know that we're constrained from offering too much comment. And indeed, I was just about to refer to that tragic incident with Sergeant Callanan, who died from the burns he received when, if I remember correctly, an individual came in with petrol or other inflammable liquid.
Exactly.
And set fire to himself, and Sergeant Callanan got caught up in the conflagration. Oh boy, well done to your two probationers last night.
Very good, yeah, great work there by them. And, you know, the individual himself, self-harm was obviously his aim as well. But anyway, he's in the right place at the moment.
Oh, yeah, I suppose we must always remember that, you know, that perpetrators can often be victims themselves, particularly in crimes like this.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're also relieved that the outcome there was so good.
Yeah.
Superintendent Martin Walker, thank you, Martin. Best regards to your members who were on duty last night during that incident. Can you imagine how frightening that was? Okay, that's Superintendent Martin Walker of Newbridge Garda Station. Let's move on now, because young adults have been disproportionately hit by the labour market impact of COVID-19, we're told, according to new research, which was published yesterday by the Economic and Social Research Institute. And now I'm joined indeed by postdoctoral fellow with the ESRI, Ivan Privalko. Good morning, Ivan.
Good morning, Clem. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you indeed. Now, this research was funded by the Community Foundation for Ireland, it's called. And what kind of an impact are we talking about?
I suppose we're most interested in differences between age cohorts. So we're looking at a number of different things, including work earnings and their tenure status. But what we find is that by the end of 2020, younger workers were kind of disproportionately hit by the pandemic in terms of employment, if you compare them to workers over 35. So we find that younger workers basically saw a fall in employment of about 14% by the end of 2020, but those who are aged older only saw a fall of about 6%. And they constitute, they kind of have you know, differences in effect. So the younger workers lost about 112,000 people in employment, and the older workers saw a fall of about 93,000 workers.
Okay, that fall is quite enormous indeed, we'll say, with 112,000 fewer 15 to 34-year-olds in paid work for the final quarter of 2020. Now, a significant cohort of those, Ivan, might be school-going, but we certainly worry about those who might be in the higher end of that age cohort, 20 to 34, as being, you know, effectively unemployed.
Yeah, well, what we find is that basically the need rate, the rate of people who are not in education, employment, or training had only just recovered by the time that the pandemic hit, and we would expect that it would start to rise. As for students, you know, it is important to remember that students do also have to balance study and work. And it's likely that they'll be hit by these lockdowns as well.
Indeed. Now, also, of course, is the ripple effect out into society generally, because the government has had to borrow billions, and I suppose if almost a third more of 20 to 24-year-olds, the cohort I just referred to and you've referred to, are not in employment, education or training, this has implications, and that's a third more not in employment compared with 2007. That has implications for prolonging the financial crisis, I imagine.
Yeah, well, it's important to remember that that group, the kind of the 25 to 29 and the 20 to 24-year-old, their NEET rate did come down. So it was at about 25 and 30% in 2011, but it's fallen now to previous levels of about 13% or 11%. So that rate was falling and it's recovering. our concern is that it could start to rise again with these employment shocks brought on by COVID.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that this really is concerning. Workers in their early 20s are earning less now in the noughties, if you like, in the 2010s even, recently in this decade, than they did back in the 1990s or 2000s.
Well, basically what we found is, if we're thinking in terms of cohorts, so those born in the 1970s and 1980s, they kind of enjoyed a weekly earnings growth. If we adjust for inflation, their earnings went up when they were in their early 20s. But for those who were born in the 90s, we're finding that their earnings have not kept up, you know, have not grown. Their earnings are basically, in their 20s, their earnings are on par with someone who was born in the 1960s, and even by age 25, you know, they haven't surpassed the average earnings of those born in the 70s and the 80s. So there is a slowdown in earnings for that group, those born in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm. And on this programme, over the last 4 or 5 days, of course, we've been speaking to various experts, including the Taoiseach, reflecting on what's happening with cuckoo funds coming into the housing market. Your research is also finding that there's huge concern here for young adults, because home ownership rates for young adults have collapsed from 61% at age 30 for those born in the 1960s to half that for those born in the 1980s. I think that's been well spelt out in terms of the debates that's been going on, and indeed including yesterday on the programme with Dr. Rory Hearn here. Now, all of this, of course, has implications for the economy going forward, for housing, for renting, for the potential employability of young people, and ultimately, I suppose, the financial burden is going to fall on the exchequer.
There's a number of things that can be done. You know, the exchequer will play a part, but I think a much more important thing to consider is that we need high quality active labour market programs. You know, yes, there should be something done about you know, more spending, but it's really about active labour market policy and then tackling the high cost of rent in the private sector, including increasing supply. So there's a number of players involved in solving the issue.
All right. By the way, the research is part of a report titled Poverty, Income Inequality and Living Standards in Ireland, which will be published on Friday. In regards to that, that's only a couple of days away, but those are significant figures indeed. The research carried out by the Economic Social Research Institute, the ESRI, and postdoctoral research fellow with the Institute and co-author of this report is Ivan Privalko. Good talking to you again, Ivan.
Thanks very much, Clem.
Thank you very much indeed. We'll keep an eye indeed for the main report in regards to that as well. Keep your messages coming, as I said, in regards to all the issues you have, the numbers. JW says, Clem, some time ago it was reported there was an outbreak in part of the Philippines. My daughter-in-law got worried about the family when she rang. They wanted to know what she was talking about. Right, well, I suppose we can always have various bits and pieces of information that don't reflect the reality in regards to that. Just checking on what we have to come later on. Coming up next, we're going to the Claremanagh Municipal District and we're going to hear from PD Fora, its president. Apparently, you can join the Irish Army if you're a non-national foreign born, but it doesn't entitle you to an Irish passport, and that has implications for other potential opportunities within our defence forces.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
You know, lads, I can't get out of my head that incident in Newbridge Garda Station last night and the potential tragedy that could have unfolded when this poor man, who obviously is not in a good place mentally, came in with what was feared might be an inflammable liquid, having been reports having come into the Gardaí earlier, as Martin Walker told us, and then spraying the two probationer Gardaí, spraying himself and then spraying the two probationer Gardaí. We could have been talking about an absolute major tragedy for everyone concerned this morning. So well done to the Gardaí at Newbridge Garda Station on their very, very swift action to save that individual from further harm to himself and indeed two members of An Garda Síochána who were on duty, two of the money probationers. Remember, those are Gardaí who are effectively in training. Right, let's go to the Clan Minute Municipal District now, where we're joined by Fine Gael Councillor Tim Durkin. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm not too bad, but Tim, I don't want to rehash the whole topic again, but in fairness, you're a councillor in the area, and we have covered this aspect literally non-stop and extremely comprehensively over the last couple of days, but just to give you the opportunity to comment on what happened in Mullan Park.
Extremely disappointing, and this broke when I did an interview on another station on Bank Holiday Monday. And I think it's completely unacceptable that a fund comes in and buys 135 homes. And what I've learned since, that they're actually trying to acquire, they're offering, if people wish to, who have purchased, if they wish to withdraw from the sale. So I assume that's only for the funds to capture more properties, which I find to be very worrying.
Well, your party leader was on this programme last week, and he said that, incidentally, I heard that interview, was on my way back from the other side of the country, and we had been on that story for a couple of days previously, because we'd been alerted to it by Angela Feeney, a colleague of yours, in regards to that. And the Taoiseach pointed out that we would expect remedial measures to deal with these cuckoo funds within days. Now, I understand that the Minister, Dara O'Brien, is bringing proposals or ideas to the Cabinet this morning, but that we won't hear an outcome of what decisions will be taken for a couple of days. So let's see what happens in regards to that. To some of your motions, Tim, you want the Council to erect a plaque in Maynooth and Kilcock to acknowledge the work of both communities in bringing the Royal Canal Greenway to fruition.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was essentially, the Greenway was launched online, which I think for a lot of people in both towns is very disappointing, but acknowledged that they had to observe COVID restrictions at the time. So in respect of that, and to acknowledge the great work that both communities put in to bring this project to fruition, which is used on a quite a regular basis by residents in both towns, it's only right that something be erected. We have to just find a little bit of funding to do it, but I don't think that will be a huge issue.
All right, out further, well out in the agenda. Did you get to discuss all these motions, because there was 40 plus on the agenda?
Indeed.
You had one about, you want to confirm when will the 1100 litre commercial bins be provided to the harbour field in Maynooth.
Yeah, this was voted on at the previous municipal district, and it went to full council, and it was voted there, and it received support from 33 members, some abstentions, and some members were absent. Essentially, what has happened in the meantime is that the clean-up schedule has been changed or amended to concentrate more so on the harbour field, which only really is a game of robbing Peter to pay Paul. I drove through the square in Maynooth this morning, and I wasn't greeted by a lovely clean square. I was greeted by rubbish bags being picked apart by crows. So it's going to come back up again, and I'm pushing the issue until it's resolved to the satisfaction of members of the public.
All right, let's see what happens in regards to that. Then you also had a further question. You wanted an update in relation to the Irish water connection to Mullan Park Maynooth. We had this yesterday again, listeners reminding us about it. And when we spoke to Angela Feeney last week, she raised that particular issue that people have bought 22 or is it 30 houses there last September, and Irish Water still hasn't connected. Why not?
So there's 22 houses sold privately, to my knowledge, 18 to be acquired by Kildare County Council, and 135 to be acquired by a Vulture Fund. It's essentially Irish Water are saying it's not them, but I'm now told that the connection is going to be made in the coming days. So thankfully, the people who have purchased 22 homes will be able to occupy them as soon as possible.
And what does "as soon as possible" maybe mean?
Well, I'm told tomorrow, between Wednesday and Thursday, the connection will be made.
All right, okay. And finally, you want what's called an interactive information board map as part of the upgrading of the harbour field in Maynooth and the harbour in Kilcock, showing heritage sites, etc. Are the council going to do that?
Yeah, it's again, they're happy to do it. The project to upgrade the Harbour Field is a project of $7.5 million. So I think an information or an interactive information board and map is easily funded through that mechanism. Again, for Kilcock, you just have to find a little bit of funding, which again, I don't think should be an issue.
All right, okay. On that particular note, that's Councillor Fine Gael, Councillor Tim Durkin, with those details in regards to motions he brought to the Clare Municipal District meeting, and that update on Mullen Park, that those people who bought homes might finally get into them within weeks, given that Irish Water hoped to connect the houses this week. Still puzzling as to why they didn't. PD4 joins us now. Its president is Mark Keane. He was with us recently. Mark, I first of all didn't realise that non-citizens, if I might use that term with the greatest of respect, could join the Defence Forces, but apparently they can. But even though they might be tasked with defending our country here, they are not able to go abroad, or they're not even entitled to an Irish passport.
Very good morning to them, and thanks again for the opportunity.
Yeah, let's deal with the idea anyway. I didn't realise that non-nationals could join the Irish Defence Forces.
Yes, they can indeed, and we've recruited from many countries over the last number of years, and actually it was the cornerstone of a recent campaign for the Defence Forces. Recruitment was to look at people who wouldn't be naturally Irish citizens, if I could say that.
Right, okay, but when they join, what's the situation?
Well, the situation currently is that, as you say, they join the Irish Defence Forces, they take the oath of loyalty and fidelity to the state, but unfortunately, we then ask them to pay for the privilege of becoming Irish citizens.
And when you say pay for the privilege, in what way and how much?
In the sense that they have to apply for nationalisation, they have to apply for citizenship, they have to apply for an Irish passport, the same as everyone else, even though they've taken, as I said, the oath of loyalty to the state. It's an excess, it ranges in fees from 1,000 upwards. I know of one particular person recently who's paid over €1,000 for the privilege, and unfortunately some of her paperwork was lost, so she's left with another bill of 1,000 because she has to start again.
Yeah, I'm a bit intrigued, before we move on to the implications of, you know, not getting the Irish passport, that effectively people who are not citizens can join the defence forces of a country. Is that what would pertain in other jurisdictions as well, can you tell me?
It does, yes. It's common practice within Europe. If we look at the Germans, the Spanish, the Portuguese, I know this country, we didn't have colonies or, you know, dependent territories like many European countries. But if we take the Portuguese, they still recruit from former colonies. The Spanish are the same. You serve a minimum of 2 to 3 years in their armed forces, and then you get citizenship. And the same in America. America since 2001, the Americans have brought it in as well for non-American citizens.
Right, now on to the other aspect then, aside from the fact of paying out a bundle of money up to €1,000 to gain citizenship, it has implications apparently for if any of those for non-nationals, and I use that term, I hate the term actually non-national, but we'll just say foreign-born members of the Defence Forces, if they want to go on Irish UN peacekeeping missions.
Yes, very much so. But this first rose, I'd say, this matter arose in 2018 when people were volunteering to serve overseas and they wanted to serve in the UN in the cause of peace in Syria and Lebanon. And we discovered that these people couldn't do it because they didn't possess an Irish passport.
Right. Is there a scenario as well that some of these members could be in a particular scenario if they were ever to return to their own countries? Have some countries regulations that their citizens should not serve in other defence forces?
Yes, the most recent countries in Eastern Europe, since the fall of communism, take a very dim view on this, especially if I may say, Lithuania has it in its constitution that people cannot serve in other armed forces, and that would be our concern, that these people, and also in Poland, would return home. There would be unknown consequences to them if they did. So we'd like to see the matter rectified, that they could have the passport, that if they wish to travel back to the country of their birth, that they could do so safely.
As Irish citizens. Now, yes. We have 13 peacekeeping missions in 12 countries. Actually, I understand that a deployment went out just during the week. We'll mention maybe that in just a moment and some other issues of concern to yourselves. But let's say, I see where our own Senator Mark Wall here of Kildare South, Labour spokesman and defence, said it's good to see the military representing the diversity which now exists everywhere in Ireland. Can you put numbers on how many foreign-born personnel we might have in the defence forces, Mark?
We have, I have not the numbers to hand, but if you take a recent recruit class in the naval service of 25, one-fifth of that was not of Irish citizenship, so you take five of them, you know, which is a very high percentage. It's across the three sections of the defence forces, the Army, the Naval Service and the Air Corps. We've started to recruit, which is a good thing because it does reflect society in general, and the defence forces should always reflect the society it serves. And they do bring, you know, a lot of diversity and new knowledge to the defence forces.
So what's the problem, essentially, if I'm deemed eligible to serve in the defence forces of this country, and to do that, and all that it entails, what's the problem in regularising the citizenship of these Defence Force members?
Unfortunately, it seems to be an Irish solution to an Irish problem where you have defence has been done by justice. It's an issue for Department of Justice. Department of Justice is saying it's an issue for Foreign Affairs, and then it comes back again. Like, these people don't join the Defence Forces just to become Irish citizens. You know, some of these people have been resident in this country for the last 18 years. Some of them have been listed in the Defence Forces as far back as 2003. They were unaware of the consequences. They were unaware of the fact that they would need the passports to serve overseas, especially in Syria and Lebanon. So it's just something that we feel is an impediment to these people serving their country. They've taken, you know, as I said, the oath of loyalty to the state, they proved their dedication and loyalty. We could repay that by waiving the costs of these passports and allowing them to contribute to peacekeeping missions, as you said, in 13 countries overseas.
Indeed, and I know you've brought it up in 2018. In regards to, and I saw a very good photo recently, you mentioned there the Naval Service, of one of the newest recruits to the Naval Service, indeed, with a fine set of dreadlocks. He looked more like Bob Marley, I have to say, whose anniversary we'll be marking today, 40 years on. And it just shows how the short back and sides has essentially changed, Mark, in the Defence Forces, because we have to reflect the diversity of Irish society now.
Oh, yes, indeed. And we will. I'd like to think that these people are made welcome in the Defence Forces, and I have no doubt they will contribute to a better Defence Forces going forward. As I said previously, we have to reflect the society we serve, and I think the Defence Forces has come on leaps and bounds in that sense. Diversity is something that should be welcomed, and it is something that leads for a better organisation.
Okay, finally, a brief word on the ongoing campaigns for better remuneration for members of the Defence Forces, particularly the rank and file, 6,500 of whom you represent. We've had wives and partners on this programme saying, listen, what our partners are being paid is not enough to run families. Any progress on the Defence Forces Commission report?
Unfortunately not, but we've been in front of the Commission, and we welcome the opportunity to be in with the Commission, and we've made a substantial submission as well, over 135 pages to the Commission. Unfortunately, we won't see the fruits of that till maybe November, December, when the Commission does publish its findings. But we'd like to think that they would take on board our concerns and our families, our members' families' concerns. As you said, we are the poorest paid within the public sector. Our members do contribute a great deal to society, both at home and abroad, and we feel that they should be remunerated for the efforts they put in.
All right, Mark Keane, President of PD4, the Defence Forces Rank and File Representative Association. On that issue of the growing ranks of foreign-born Defence Force members who PD4 says are being discriminated against because they're not entitled to Irish passports, and that has knock-on effects then because they're denied a role in some UN peacekeeping missions, 13 of which we have abroad at the moment. Mark, thanks very much indeed.